We are live. So where's the counting?
It's just, let me just use your expression. Chill your beans, buddy. I'll count you in, okay? Chill, I do this for a living.
Chill your beans.
Chill your beans, homie. That's right. my favorite expression of Brits is the in the car world, like giving it the beans.
Giving it like, beans, yeah.
We would say probably like pedal to the metal.
Yep. Yeah.
But you say, give it full beans.
English
give it
people beans. Go, give it some beans, mate. Come on.
Come on.
Give it some beans. All right. Let's go.
Well, I'm just going to count us in at a lovely 92 BPM. One, two, three, four.
That was 92.
I was going to say, just to be clear for the drum nerds out there that pulled out their metronome, I have no idea what tempo that was. I don't. Can you do that? Like if I said, give me 60, can you do that?
No, I really can't. I was thinking while she was saying that, I was like, yeah, I don't know what tempos feel. Even to this day, if someone's on the kit and we're having like a lesson and I put on a click in Logic, I'm like, yeah, we'll just go at 120 or not.
Ooh, that's moving.
Yeah, that's moving. Yeah.
Why don't we just do it at a learning tempo of 198? yeah, and I think it also is like a sign of the times. By the time that I was playing in bands, there was already, even though we obviously didn't have apps or anything, but we had portable metronomes. Like I always had a metronome. I had a Dr. Beat, the Boss Dr. Beat, I think, or Dr. Rhythm or something. Uh-huh. Basically, I had the Tama Rhythm Watch.
Ooh. That,
yeah. You remember that one?
Yeah, I remember that.
Button in the middle that you could just, oh.
That's a big boy, that one. That is a big boy. There's a band called Foals. Have you heard of them?
Of course, yeah. Love Foals.
Oh yeah, I forget, they're big in America. So the drummer, they don't play to click, but he starts off every song on the Tama click thing, which is pretty good. It's a good idea.
Yeah, I saw, who was it? Abe Laboriel Jr. doing it with Paul McCartney, and he'd just press it to his head in this massive stadium and get the tempo and then throw it on the ground and count the band in, you know? Yeah.
I think especially
if you want to like have the band breathe, I understand in like modern touring situations and stuff, there's just too much going on. There might be lights that are synced up with everything. You kind of have to be on a grid. But if you're just playing clubs and you want it to breathe a little bit, you should still start the song with the proper tempo. Like get it from a click and then you don't have to play with a click. Like whatever happens from there on out, you're not going to rush 10-15 BPM. You might push a little bit or drag a little bit, but I think it's good to like start with the proper tempo.
Oh mate, 100%, because that's the hardest bit. Because your adrenaline is going to be kicking in, and like if you kick off a track that's already fast and you play it faster, you're doomed basically.
Doing that with the adrenaline, you think you're dragging, so you're telling your bandmates, hey, let's go. We're only 20 BPM over the real tempo here. Let's move this thing along.
That is crazy, man. I remember that like in LTA, my old band, like if you were tired, things felt so slow, and if you were buzzed, obviously things went way faster. And I remember just thinking like, this is crazy, man. Like, give me a click. Just give me. It makes my life so much easier than having like your mate turn around and be like, mate, let's go speed up. And you're thinking, well, no, we're already way faster. I used to hate that, man.
It is kind of the, we have nothing to talk about here. Like, so with the Simon Says shows, the two that we did, both of those were on click. I've never in my life played live to a click. Never once.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh boy. So we're going to have to rehearse with this. Well, the good thing is once you get that first person in the band to look up and be like, does it feel slow? I can say factually, I don't know what it feels like, but it's right.
Yeah.
There's nothing to talk about. No discussion.
Love that. It's like, it can feel however you want it to, mate. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because it is what it
is. I don't know what you're feeling right now, sir. But I can tell you it's correct. Now, would you like us to play this faster than we recorded it? That's fine. I'll reset the metronome. We'll start 2 BPM faster. Yeah. And maybe it'll feel better to you. But because I honestly, all jokes said, I wouldn't mind that if a band was like, can we do it like 2-3 BPM faster for the live shows? It just feels like it's dragging. It's like, dude, no problem at all. But once I press this button, we shall not speak. There's nothing to talk about. I didn't rush. I didn't drag.
Yeah.
I had a dude playing the loudest effing cowbell in my ear for the whole song. Gook, gook, gook. It's like, I
love that, mate. That is the true angel on anyone's shoulder. And I feel like people, drummers who are listening to this will fully relate, especially if they're in like a hardcore band, a metal band, because all of that show is based on feel and energy. And like, yeah, there's nothing worse when you're vibing out and your guitarist turns around and goes, mate, slow down. Your night is done. Your night is ruined. It's like when you're hanging out with your friends at your house and you're joking around and then your mum comes in and goes, ah, that didn't happen. Stop lying. And you go, oh,
dude,
that's my night over. I was just joking.
There is nothing worse than getting called out on an exaggeration.
Oh my God.
Amber will pull out receipts. She fact checks everything so that whoever I'm talking to knows, like, that's wrong. He has juiced that by 10%. That didn't happen. Like, here's the audio recording of what Eddie actually said back to him. I saved that because he's going to say that Eddie thought it was funny, but Eddie actually didn't think it was funny. And it's like, babe, just let me have one. Like,
just let me have one. Come on. Do you know what I mean?
Let me live in the fantasy. How are you doing, man?
I'm good, mate. Yeah, I've had a crazy day. I'm going to Scotland tomorrow to see some family, but then also a little holiday. Well, not a holiday, but a break somewhere nice. Like a little spa, a retreat, nice, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, a classic Eddie thrower. Remembered today that it was tomorrow we're leaving. So doing a podcast, a Patreon video, some other bits and bobs. Still haven't packed. Still don't know what I'm going to pack. But
love it.
But it's going to be nice, mate. I'm going to actually try to chill out for like 3 or 4 or 5 days. Just not think about, well, I will think about stuff, but I don't want to do anything. And that's really hard for me to do. I know you're the same. It's tough.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 2 days is when the fidgeting starts. But okay, so let me ask you this. Will you still, though, lean into the other business? Will you still go visit shoe stores, resellers, just like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, I didn't pack enough shoes. Let me just swing by this place that sells, you know, consignment shoes.
Most definitely. Yeah. And then also I've got an SD card full of videos that I need to edit. And so if people are watching TV at night, then what's the harm in getting out your laptop and doing a little bit of work?
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
And I mean, it's not your fault. You and I, last time we were in Scotland, we stopped for a cheeky little Nando's, just some Nando's, no big deal. You got recognized by like 9 shoe people, not drum people, but people were like, oh, Eddie, what's up? Oh, Paragon, what's up? Yo. And then they're like showing us their kicks. And I was like, wow, this dude is like shoe famous.
Yeah, I remember that.
It's pretty cool.
One of our members came over and he was like 20 and he had like an AP on the most expensive watch ever. And you were like, who's this kid? And I was like, just sells shoes.
Daddy let you borrow his watch? And then Eddie was like, no, he's actually doing really well. Like,
yeah, oh, man, Jesus. But I've been flat out today. How's your day been? I know your camp starts this Sunday, doesn't it? So I bet you're doing the same thing as me, right? Rushing around.
Honestly, it snuck up on me so quick. And I was writing the curriculum and everything. And, you know, curriculum is tough because if I was to just put it out like a book and just say, okay, here's the book. You guys want to know what it's like to come to drum camp? Here you go. It would do no good for anyone because that's not how I write these things. I write these things knowing you'll be here in person. So I literally could have a page of quarter notes. And if you just bought the book, you'd be like, I guess we're learning quarter notes. But if you were at camp, you would find out that that's what your left hand was doing while we were doing these other 3 things. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Like,
it's not an instructional book. It's more like a, here's what you need to read. But everything else is, I'm just going to tell it to you. So this whole week has just been me going through the things that I totally took for granted. A little left-right kick happening over here.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah.
Just like, okay, well, I don't even need to really look at this page, but I'll just play it just because it's stupid. Oh my God, this is meant for Dream Theater. This is intermediate camp stuff, by the way, and I'm just struggling.
That is me in every single video that I try and teach in. I'm like, I've got this. So all you need to do is, and then it falls apart. But yeah, it's tough, mate, because I'm
like, well, we'll film this tomorrow.
Because I don't think people really realize, but you write a new book for every camp that you do, don't you?
Yeah, every year I write 2 new books, like an intermediate book and an advanced book. So we're on, this is year 14 of camps. So I've written now 28 books.
20.
That no one has ever seen unless you came to camp.
That's crazy. But that must be a good catalyst for getting better at the drums. Do you know what I mean? For yourself.
Honestly, the only reason I haven't been posting in the practice project lately is because so many of those members are coming to camp. And the only thing I'm truly practicing, I'm practicing more than ever, but it's all camp related stuff. And I mean, even yesterday, I just went through the entire book, played the book from start to finish while trying to speak out loud and just literally in a room having a conversation with myself, like this podcast, like just talking out loud to see, okay, can I teach this? Can I move my eyes around? Do I need to be staring at the music or can I look and make sure the campers are doing everything they need to be doing while I'm playing this exercise, while saying, Jason, left foot, all right, man, you know, while still playing, like it's pushing it to that level of freedom that, you know, you won't know until you teach a camp and then you get caught out on it.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the stuff that's really, really, that no one kind of factors that in. I think, like, obviously shout out our wives. They are the best supporters ever. But when you come home from a day of being like, oh, I'm just so tired, man. I did so much today. Oh, what did you do? Just played like a paradiddle over like a ostinato and it's just so hard. They go, cool. Anyway, real life.
So Juno peed in the house. Great, babe.
Yeah.
Han barfed over there. You know, and it's like, okay, look, I do understand that your life was tough at home, but I don't think you understand what it's like to keep track of 8 people's left feet, whether or not they're playing quarter notes on silent pads while I'm playing drum track. And so I go, but I love you. Love you so much.
Exactly.
Now, I do have a little something for you.
Okay, go on.
Yesterday, we, the band, who, by the way, I think I've mentioned this, but if you see that Simon Says is coming to your town in the next couple weeks, I will not be with them. My favorite drummer in the world, Chris Robine, he's taking my place for these tours because I will be teaching camps. But anyways, we approved our final mix on our first technically new song. The song's 20 years old. It never made it onto an album because of some lyrical content that Hollywood Records was not okay with at the time. But we re-recorded it as like a proof of concept. Could we track drums at my studio? Could my guitarist track guitar, bass, and vocals at his studio? And could we have this mix and could we put it out and be proud of it? So I have the final mix. Would you like to hear a little bit of it?
Most definitely, yeah. Most definitely.
The old mikeslessons.com video studio, and
that is wicked, mate. It sounds great. It sounds amazing, mate. Honestly, it sounds so good. It's so weird, like, but it's so cool just hearing you play that kind of music again. But like, it's just wicked, mate. It's just so nice to be like, oh yeah, he's got it in the bank. Because I remember Charlie, I think we were on tour, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was after, and I was just at his house. He was like, mate, I saw Mike play, and I was like, wait. Yeah, you follow him like yeah, of course you do. And he was like, mate, but like play like he like was playing hard, and I was like, yeah. He was like, mate, it's sick. It's so funny, man. It's just it's wicked, isn't it? Like that just goes to show how you know how quick social media moves and whatnot, and how sometimes people who think people know that, you know, you play in this band and you can play like this, but like people just don't, do they? It's so cool for them to hear you like that.
Well, that's a perfect segue into today's topic. By the way, everybody, welcome into episode 162, Drum with Mike and Eddie, 15 minutes deep. So how we got something. So I want to find out from you, because I kind of know, but honestly, just like what you were talking about, like, well, yeah, I used to play in this band, but nobody knows about it. Like, I don't really know how you got in Busted. Like, I know you're in Lower Than Atlantis. I know that, you know, obviously Charlie with, is it Fight Star?
Yeah.
So he obviously loves rock. So he was probably but I don't really know the whole thing. Like, I mean, at some point there's people that don't know you, management and everything else, that has to be like, okay, this is our new drummer. So give me like from, I have no connection to Busted whatsoever, to, wow, we are at, this is Wembley.
Yeah. All right, cool. So I think this is going to be an interesting one for listeners, because every time I listen to a podcast and people are talking about things they've done or whatever, they're always talking from like the top of the mountain. Like they're doing this and it's wicked. And I always listen. I think like, well, tell me how you got there. Like what actually happened? What are the finer details? Long story short, I was playing in my old band and we decided to go on a hiatus. Announced the hiatus. And then when I was, I think it was one cold evening up at this farm that I'm currently in and on, I was playing drums. I think it was about 11 p.m. at night. And I was just practicing drums. I was just playing. At this point, Travis wasn't born. So that was kind of what my evenings looked like. I would just play drums and play drums and play drums. Had the membership going, wanted to make as much content as possible. I was very dialed into like, posting content and like trying to show, because I knew, well, my band was coming to an end and I needed work essentially. So I was so dialed into that. So every evening was like, no matter what, I was just filming some videos and playing drums, trying to get better. Got to about 11 p.m., sat down in this freezing cold shipping container, just thinking, what is going on with my life? Like, I don't know. My whole identity and my job and my band has now come to an end. And I know what you know what that feels like. And I'm sure many 100%. People listening do. It's
you literally lose your identity.
It's kind of terrifying. No matter how cool you try to be with it and think, oh, when a book closes, but then another one opens and all that kind of stuff. It's true, but it's terrifying.
Well, yeah, it doesn't feel like that in the moment. Like that's what people say while you're bricking it, right? Like you're losing your mind. It's other people that have come out the other end that are like, when one door closes, not one door. And I'm like, really? Then open the door for me.
Yeah, I'll wait. Come on. Show me there's a door there, mate. I can't see anything right now.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to get evicted. Like, so I know what door's opening, like the landlord kicking my ass out.
Exactly that. So yeah, it was one of those evenings and I was like, oh, you know, what's going on? Anyway, I went on Instagram and I had a little notification in my DMs and it was Matt from Busted. And it just said, hi, mate.
It wasn't Charlie.
It wasn't Charlie. No, it wasn't Charlie. It was Whoa. Matt from Busted. So Matt, the bass player. And he said, you're right, mate. How you doing? Do you want to come? It was straight up. Do you want to come play drums for us next year? And I think this was around November or something like that. So I remember thinking next year, that's a long time away. And then I looked at the calendar because I'm terrible with my months, just like you. And it wasn't long away. It was pretty soon. And I remember thinking, what the hell? Like, this isn't just someone saying, you're right, mate, how you doing? Like, this is someone just straight up asking me, do I want to come and play drums for them? A band like Busted. And if you're from the UK, you know about Busted. Like, they're iconic and huge. And
you already know it's not going to be club dates.
Exactly. Yeah. I think he actually said, like, on our next arena tour. And I was like, well, what the hell? And I remember I screenshot it and sent it to Rona. And just said, because she was a big Busted fan as well. And I was like, check out who just DM'd me. And I obviously had no hesitation. I replied and I was like, mate, of course. Like, what's the details? And then quickly I met up with them. So this was like, I think a Wednesday or something. Thursday, I arranged to meet them. Friday, met up with the band in London in their label. And at the time, the record label, I think it was either Warner Brothers or Sony, I think, either one of those or BMG. Anyway, it was so Spinal Tap. It was like I went into Central London, I went up to the boardroom, and they were signing their new album that they had just recorded. So they were in like the big boardroom with the long table, and they were all spread out. And they didn't mean it to be like this, but it was just so music industry. It was so like...
Totally.
We're meeting in the major label building on the big boardroom table with the boys and the manager. But of course, they were like super lovely, walked in the room. I'd met Charlie briefly one other night on tour once, but it was more just like, oh, you're right, mate, you know V-Man and you know all these other people and yeah, how you doing? Yeah, good, mate, cool, see you later. So it was the first time meeting the boys and the manager, and we sat down and they basically said, like, we'll play you some of the songs of the album, and this is what we're after. We're after a drummer and kind of want to put them on a retainer, and you know, like, we just, are you up for it, basically? And I kind of got the gig there and then, without any audition.
Now, wait a minute. Is there any talk at this moment about, like, how, you must have been, what, 28?
I was...
29?
I was, like, 27, I think.
Yeah, 27. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, you're a bit younger than the boys. Was it just, we're getting this great drummer? Or, I mean, do they even bring up, like, hey, you have the vibe, you're the age... you're going to bring in a new demographic? Or is it just like, dude, we dig you and you're a good drummer?
Yeah, I think it was that. I can't really, wow. I don't really remember like any specifics. I think what had
happened. You know what? Someone that does, let's bring in our guest, Charlie Simpson. come on.
Yeah, it was crazy. I remember just thinking like, I was really nervous, obviously, and I wanted to make a good impression. And in those situations, you don't know what to say and like how many jokes to crack and whatnot. And it was just like, cool, yeah, let's do it. Of course I'm up for it. And then I went back home and just rehearsed all of the songs and fast forwarded to like the first rehearsals. And then on the tour, I found out that basically Matt and Charlie, I believe, asked a few friends, like, we need a new drummer. We want someone. Who do you recommend? And a few people recommended me.
Wow.
And then Matt said to Charlie, what about Eddie? Like, this guy is, I think he said he's a living legend, but I don't want to quote him on that. I just, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's, we'll have to look up the newspaper article.
Exactly. I might have to go back for the DM. I'll screenshot it. I'll put it in the Patreon. And then Charlie said, yeah, mate, like, of course, I didn't know the LCA were ending. And I don't think he really kind of knew the extent of my playing, really. That's what I've kind of picked up on. And what he said to me over the years of like getting to know him really well is that like, he didn't really know I could play how I play. And I don't mean to sound arrogant, right, but
no,
it just shows the importance
get.
of videos and social media. Like, and that was exactly what I was doing. When I say I was sat in this stone cold shipping container, trying to figure out what I was doing with my life. But all I knew was that I had to be consistent with getting better at the drums and posting videos. That's what happens, because essentially I got hired from Busted through Instagram. They knew I could tour. They knew I had like that background and play live and I could play for the music and all of those things. But then what maybe tipped me over the edge is that they could see this other side of my playing and see me and see what I look like and see the clothes and see how I carry myself and this, that, and the other. Yeah. And I think all of that comes into play. That's why social media is so difficult, because everyone can relate to filming a video where you're not thinking about anything. And then all of a sudden you do think and you go, ah, what if my favorite country artist sees this video? Is that going to put them off? Or what if my favorite drum company sees this video and it's not choppy enough? It's too boring. I'm not going to get an endorsement by this company and the other. I think Instagram sealed the deal. And then obviously in the rehearsals as well, I did a lot of prep. But essentially how I got the gig for Busted was the communication was through Instagram. And I got it from my being my other band and posting videos, essentially. So
quick question, like on the financial side of things, you know, I don't know how you guys did it in LTA, but definitely with Simon Says, we had so much, because we got advances, we had so much to recoup that we never got paid from anything we did. Like, we got lots of money up front, publishing deals, merch deals, but there was never like a, and here's your payment for tonight's show. Mm-hmm. So going into like, okay, you're now not in a band, you're a professional session musician, you're being brought in to do this thing, they're going to pay you per show and maybe put you on a retainer. Like, was it kind of a good thing financially for your life at that time too?
Oh yeah, 100%.
I mean, you need it?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it was Yeah, it was like, I remember actually being transparent. I didn't know what to even charge because I'd gone from being
right.
like,
how
yeah,
would you?
Like you said, I mean, there's a famous video in the UK of this kind of comedian and personality. And he's talking about getting paid as a TV guy or a creative. And he always talks about the pot. It goes into the pot. And, but then right. when yeah. you get your, what is the pot? Whose pot yeah. is it? Do you know what I mean? It's like,
do I get a spoon for this yeah, pot? Because it seems like the pot doesn't live around here.
And it's so true. It's like when you're an artist or in a band, everything goes into the pot. And then like,
yep.
you're like, all right, okay. All right. We just got.
It's
just
currently happening right now, by the way, just so you know. Literally, someone texted in the band like, hey, made this amount. And I was like, okay, well, that's enough for me to care. Do I get a fourth of that? It's like, well, no, because we got to, you know, then all of a sudden it's U-Haul and it's like, well, and the hoodies, God, that's multiple colors that yep. we printed right over the zipper. And I'm like, oh, just say no, just say no. But are you splitting it in thirds? Are you three getting some? Because I've dealt with that booze that I'm sure that you've dealt with people knowing you're in Busted. Like, well, Eddie's doing fine. It's like, yeah. whoa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Fair
yeah,
is
yeah.
fair.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
no, no.
Exactly. Exactly.
Where's my cut?
The pot, mate. The famous, famous pot. So I was used to being in that pot situation. So like yeah. you would do this headline. Well, you would headline the show. You would do this festival. You would see the numbers come in. And obviously you got to pay crew and all this kind of stuff, which adds up. But you would go, hang on a minute. I should be getting a little bit of this pot. Anyway, so I remember calling my old manager in LCA and I remember calling a few other drummers and just saying like, I don't know what to charge, mate. I don't know what yeah. to do here. And it's that classic thing of in any situation when you're getting paid to play the drums, you do not want to go in too hot and like make them think you're really arrogant and value yourself too high and spoil it and make them think, oh, God, he's a lovely guy.
Or cost yourself the gig. They're exactly. just like, no, we can't afford that. Moving on. You're like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah.
No, we can negotiate.
Yeah, no. I was only joking. but you also don't want to do the gig knowing that others are doing the same, a similar gig and getting paid more.
Right.
So it's really difficult. But at the time, to answer your question, yeah, it was like, oh my God, this is heaven for me. So it was, getting the gig came from just, you know, just years and years of playing in a band and wow. slogging it out and then posting on social media. And then also like, it, you know, we talk about luck a lot on this podcast and, you know, luck can get you things, but luck can't get you through things. And what really sealed the deal, I guess, is the fact that, you know, I got along with them. Like they're genuinely some of my best mates in the world now. And then I practiced my ass off. I learned, I think it was about 24 songs for the potential set list. I learned them better than they did. I had to go in being like, because they hadn't practiced in a while. I wanted to know the music better than them. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. Yeah. Like, hey, I'll hold us together. Like I'm now invaluable because I'm the glue for this thing.
Yeah.
Totally.
So so my point is that's the true sealing the deal. Do you know what I mean? Like playing the first show. I think the first show was in Dubai and then it kind of went from there, really.
Of course
really.
It was.
But yeah, of course it was, yeah.
But we're not friends anymore.
It was amazing. Honestly, like the reason why I've got so much respect for them and love for them is because like they handled that situation and they dealt with that situation so well and welcoming and professional. And one of the things they said to me, which was, it's being kind of transparent, but whatever. It's what this podcast is about. They said, you'll be treated like a band member. And that meant so much to me because like, I come from being in my own band and not that ego was a thing, but I didn't want to, you know, do the whole travel separately, you know, stay in a different hotel. It was like, they said, you'll be treated like a band member. You'll be treated like an equal and one of us. And that was like, all right, you tell me what you're comfortable paying me and I'll flip and do it. Cause this is, you're being so courteous and so nice and respectful and showing me a lot of love here that of course I'll do it. So yeah, man, it was, what happened. I mean, Instagram and social media can be crazy. And I'm sure Instagram and social media had an impact on, you know, how you got your thing.
Golly, gee willikers. You know what? When you end it with those two words, your thing, it makes me think that we should do, I don't know, something in the future.
We should.
Oh, that's happy Easter, everybody. There's your egg. Anyways, that's just a little something to come. Your thing. So, Yeah. So you had asked me, that's what kind of triggered this whole idea for this episode about like how you got your, and we were just talking about like the things that are the most impactful to us. And to me, signing with Meinl was the most impactful thing in probably in my modern career. So obviously the Simon Says thing was one thing. And those endorsements were really awkward for me because I didn't get any of them. They were all gotten for me by the producer that did the first Simon Says album. Mm-hmm. He literally just said, write down your favorite companies and I'll contact them all. And I think the only one that said no was Remo. And we didn't carry Evans at the store that I worked at the time. We only carried Aquarian and Remo. So I was like, okay, Aquarian. And that was it. Like I just said, I don't know, DW, Peisty, Remo and Vic Firth. And then I got all of them except for Remo. And then we did a deal with Aquarian. But none of them were me choosing the companies or because I just didn't even know. I was like, well, DW is good and Peisty is good. So then fast forward, I have my modern career just starting. I'd been with Peisty for about 14 years. Absolutely loved my time there. Loved the symbols. But was, you know, starting to open my eyes to other things. I was kind of leaning a different style. I was coming out of the hit everything as hard as I can rock scene. And I was kind of leaning into a more, I guess, drummer only artistic style. And I was constantly asking, like, do you guys have anything that's like kind of trashy? And they're like, no, we don't. And we don't want to.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, cool. And this is, keep in mind, this is over a decade ago. This is not the Peisty that's there now. But I had a great relationship with them and they were very kind. So anyways, one day I'm at PASIC and this is my very first time attending PASIC. So this isn't the one I was performing at. This is me just going, I've heard about this thing forever. I'm going to turn up as a customer. So I'm walking around and Norbert from Meinl comes up to me and he's a very intimidating fellow. And he's like, hello. And I was like, hello, sir. And he's like, I just want you to know, we understand what you are doing. And he handed me a business card and that was it. And at this time, the industry was kind of laughing at me for trying to take this thing that was a sure success. I had the drum lab. It was successful. The business is so simple. Just franchise it and make more of them and more of them, make more money and just keep going. And I had just sold that and kind of pushed all my chips on teaching online. And the industry was not supporting it at all. And they were like, what are you doing with your life?
So yeah. How many subscribers did you have? What would you...
Sure.
Where were you at in your career?
So not even subscribers yet. We didn't even have subscription. We were a la carte. So we didn't even have courses, which we first called packs. All we had was lessons. So individual lessons for 99 cents. Wow. So if someone came to my website and put 10 lessons in their cart, that was $10. And I was stoked.
Yeah.
Like running around town being like, you know what I did today? Nothing and made $10. Because I did the work previously. I made the video, you know? So that's what I had. It was basically, and I think I've mentioned it on here before, but it was literally iTunes for drummers. I saw that iTunes broke up albums into 99 cent songs, and I loved that idea. And I was spending a lot on drumming DVDs that were just too expensive for me. So I was like, but I can't even watch the whole DVD. Why can't I just buy the first chapter?
Yeah.
So I just did that. So that's where I was at. And Norbert was the first one to say, like, we understand what you're trying to do. So that was just my, and I looked at the card and I was like, Meinl, dog, I play for Peisty. Are you kidding me with this shit? Like, these are the symbols that come for free on Tama kits. No, thank you. Now, keep in mind, we have no Meinl dealers at this time in Sacramento. So I have no experience with the symbols. I just know that they are. We don't even carry them in our stores. They just come for free on Tama kits. Like, hey, blow through these and then you can have some real ones.
You had like a perception of them. Or I guess they had a perception of their own brand that was like not as good as it is now.
At least in America, their branding was that. And they made the symbols that went on Wind Up Monkey's hands. I'm not kidding.
That's crazy.
I was like, dude, this isn't even a real company. Whatever. Didn't give it anything. He was very nice. Whatever. That was it. Then, just fans at the door. Just kidding. It was Kyle from Sociology.
That is brilliant.
So then we're getting into this. I'm starting to grow. We start the membership. Things are happening. And we finally open our current place here. And Benny Greb reached out, and I didn't know Benny. Benny didn't know me, but a mutual friend, Johnny Rabb, had put us in contact with each other. And this is, I guess, 14 years ago now. And he goes, "Hey, man, I'd love to do a drum camp with you. I heard you're offering drum camps. I'd like to do one at your place." You know, and I was like, "Yeah, that'd be great." So he came here. Meinl shipped his cymbals here. Sonar shipped a kit here. That was my very first time experiencing Meinl cymbals in my entire life. And they had just come out with the Extra Dry series. And instantly, I mean, in the moment, we made fun of each other's cymbals all day long. He was like, "Your cymbals hurt my ears." And I was like, "Yeah, well, your cymbals look like trash can lids. So I guess we're even." But every night when he'd go back to the hotel, I'd stick around and tap a little bit. And I was like, "Dude, these are kind of sick." So here's where the thing gets kind of weird is, like, I didn't think at all about signing with Meinl. Dude, I'm on Peisty. I'm good to go. I then bought one of his 18-inch crash. No, I didn't buy one. I'm sorry. I made a video of his actual 18-inch extra dry thin crash, and I sent that to Peisty, and I said, "We need to make this right now." Mm-hmm. Like, if we can make this, we can dominate this whole landscape. And they were like, "Dude, I'm sorry. That's just not who we are as a brand. We make perfect, beautiful Swiss cymbals, and we're very proud of it." And all credit to them for knowing who they are as a brand and not chasing what might be a trend. And I was like, "Oh, that's too bad." Well, at that same time, and here's where we get to, like, how did I sign with Meinl? At that same time, Chris Brewer, the American rep for Meinl, had bought some stuff on mikeslessons.com. He bought a couple shuffle lessons. And those specific lessons he bought, for some reason, the website hadn't uploaded the PDFs properly. There was no PDF for it. So he emailed Amber, "Hey, I paid for these lessons, and I'm just wondering if there's an attached PDF." But his signature said Chris Brewer, Artisan Relations, Meinl. And Amber, so this should have never made its way to me. Just Amber's eagle eye was like, "Hey, I think the A&R from Meinl just bought some stuff on the site." And I'm like, "Oh, that's awesome." And then she said, "But he doesn't have a PDF." So I look into the PDF, and then I ended up contacting him. And then he, to his credit, he did not try to poach me. And he was like, "Oh, cool." You know, I called him on the phone. I was like, "Hey, I have the PDF for you. I'll just email it to you now. Do you need anything else?" He's like, "Nope, I'm all good." I'm like, "Okay, cool." So that 18-inch crash. And he was like, yeah, dude, kind of gray area for me. Let's just keep it PDFs and shuffles." And I was like, "I know, no, I totally get it. I'm just saying, like, because Benny was here and I was, you know, the 14-inch, he had some, like, prototype sand hats." And Chris was like, "Yeah, dude, really gray area for me to talk about this with you. Like, I have all the respect in the world for Peisty." And I was like, no, I totally get it. And so, but it was like inception. The seed was planted. I couldn't think of anything else. I could hear that 18-inch extra dry crash in my head. Like, I'd never heard a crash that had the decay of a China. And I was like, I don't know if I can be me without this on my gear. So basically then I called him and said, "Look, man, the truth is I'm really thinking about, I'd like to know more. I'd like to play these cymbals." And once again, to his credit, he was like, "We can talk all day, but not until you leave Peisty." And that was the sketchy thing, was I don't get to sign with Meinl first. Like, I got to leave, be without a deal. Ooh. And then find out, did I make the worst decision of my career?
That's like selling your house without buying a new one.
Yes, it is exactly that. And that's how I felt. I felt, I mean, we can go a little easy on the metaphors, but I felt homeless.
Yeah. I get it.
I just was like, "Oh my gosh, like, well, what if, what I, you know," because I actually did that before in my career. I left Drum Guitar City for our rival store that I thought was doing things so much better. I literally left all my friends, left everyone that had supported me. And I was like, "I'm going to Skip's Music." And it was great, but it wasn't Drum Guitar City. And I had to come crawling back. And I was, I had that, like, burn left in me of like, "Okay, don't do that again." So anyways, long story short with that, I did leave Peisty on great terms. And my rep there is now my Gretsch A&R. So he's like my uncle. Like, we've been friends the whole time. He was really supportive. And he said, "The only possible reason I can support of you leaving our company is sound. If we can't offer you the sound, because if you need more support, we'll figure something out. You know, hell, if you want more support and you don't deserve it, I'll tell you what to do with your career so you do deserve it. Here's what you would need to do for us to support you. But if it's sound and it's just not where we're headed with our company, then that's the only reason to leave." So I signed with Meinl, flew to Nashville, picked out some symbols, and then they sent me eventually to Germany. I had like the best business lesson of my entire life, landed it in Germany, went to the Meinl factory, sat down with Udo, the vice president, and he sat me in one of those big conference rooms, and he just very German said, "Tell me five things that are wrong with our company." And that was his first line. I was like, "What? Like, no, no, you guys do everything." He's like, "Stop it. I don't want to know what's good. I know what's good. What's wrong?" And that, and I was like, "That's amazing. That's way better than the American way of like, hey, so are we doing good? We're doing good, right? Yeah, yeah. We are doing pretty
good.
We're
amazing. Yeah.
Hey, could you say crushing it? Thanks. I like that." Yeah. And so, yeah, it was really cool. And then what was even better was like some of the things that were said in that very first meeting, those are now a big part of Meinl's DNA because he takes critique seriously.
Okay, cool.
I'll look into that. So that was kind of how I signed with Meinl. And then I just have to say that like, I just wouldn't have the career I have. There were so many moments where there was an opportunity for a Meinl artist and they pitched me as that person, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. And I remember them saying like, "We are going to go all in on you so that you'll never need us again." And in all honesty, like, I call them maybe two times a year as far as needing anything, or I've never said, "Hey, could you help me get on a festival or a drum clinic tour?" Maybe drum clinic tours, but only like, "Hey, if I'm going to do this, I want to do it with you guys because you do it the best." So it was really cool.
So how, I just had a quick question regarding like how Norbert knew of you at that time. So what was was it magazine articles that you previously had and that kind of stuff? Is that how Norbert knew you? Like, I guess kind of what does it equate to now? Like if you can, like, did you have a big following on Instagram?
Or there was no Instagram.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like,
even launched yet.
What is the compare? Like, how can you compare it to now? I'm just trying to, so listeners can, you know, like, for example, if there was no Instagram and all that kind of stuff now, what was the, can you compare it to anything, if that makes sense? Like, small in magazines or big?
Yeah, well, to Aquarian's credit, they took out a full page ad with me. And at the time I was a private drum teacher. Like, what? Who does that? Like,
that's crazy.
That was it was unbelievable. Like, you know, I remember asking Roy Burns, the president and founder at the time, like, "Man, I don't want to mess this up, but why would you do this? Like, you have all these amazing artists." And he's like, "I believe in what you're doing and you just have a passion, you know?" And I was like, okay. So kind of like what you were saying with like, sometimes there's luck, but luck isn't enough. Like, I don't think that being a good drum teacher ever even factored into the equation. They just thought, "Man, we've never seen somebody so obsessed with wanting to be a good drum teacher."
You
know, there was plenty of great drum teachers. We weren't lacking those, but it was like, they were all bitching. They were like, you know, "I used to play with..." Cool. Yeah. Well, I quit playing with those people so I could do this. Like, this is everything to me. So I think Norbert knew from that, and then YouTube. YouTube was the only social media, but at that time it was me and maybe three other guys that were doing it full time, a new video maybe every 3 days.
Yeah.
Just go. And the production quality was terrible, but at the time, the fact that we had clean audio, clean video, and just I never even had a key light until, I don't know, 10 years ago. But like in the beginning, I would move the lamp as close as I could so there was some light on my face.
Yeah.
But it just showed that we cared. And so, yeah. So as far as equating it to now, it would be like, I guess, being like a TikTok star.
Right.
Where the companies don't understand it, but they don't want to miss out on it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. It's amazing, man, because I feel like more people have the question of how do you get endorsed over how do you get a gig? Because being endorsed now is like, you know, there's a lot of people who sit at home and make videos in their living room and make good money from it. And having an endorsement equals that you get reposted on their pages. And it's all about metrics, isn't it? Followers, likes and views and all that kind of stuff. And people want that upward graph. And with a band, you don't get that. Do you know what I mean? Like, well, you might do if the band huge, but... So I feel like a lot of people want to know how you get endorsed and what the correct way is and all this kind of stuff. And what I love about the whole process of getting endorsed is it's completely unique and there's so many variables and there's so many like things that have to line up to make it work. But when it does work, dude, it's magic.
My Gretsch endorsement, my A&R at the time, not the A&R I have now, Her name was Kim Graham. She was absolutely amazing. Didn't play drums and knew almost nothing about drummers. She was just told by my A&R at Aquarian, like, hey, he's thinking about leaving DW. It would be in your best interest to sign this guy. And she's like, sounds good to me. And that was it. It was, you know, and I've talked about this in the past, but I always envisioned endorsements being like The Voice. Like, yeah, you play a drum solo and someone hits a button and turns their chair around and I'm like, Ludwig's in. And I keep playing and then another button, I'm like, freaking Yamaha, that's jet skis, baby.
Yeah, it's like Shark Tank. You know, and like,
yeah, totally. But nope, it's a lot of times it's, you know, I mean, sometimes it's really 64 audio. That was, you know, my in-ears. I didn't expect them to be drummers. They actually are drummers, or they have drummers in the company. But I reached out to Carter McLean and just said, like, I just don't even know who to talk to. I don't know how to start. So sometimes it's who you know. But here is the thing. No matter who you know, no matter what luck happens, if you can't provide them more value than they can provide you, you don't have a shot. That is it.
Yeah.
It's very they true. Are only sending you a set of hi-hats so that you will sell 10 sets of hi-hats. Like, so that's all I would recommend to people is, like, whether it's in a letter, a phone call, a face-to-face meeting, you have to somehow prove to them that you can offer them more value than they can offer you. And you also have to really, really stick to your guns because they all know each other. So please do not go to the Meinl booth and say, I've always dreamed of being a Meinl artist. And 5 minutes later, go to the Zildjian booth.
Yeah.
They will have dinner later that night. They're like, oh, you saw Greg too? Yeah, he said he always dreamed of being a Zildjian artist. Oh, funny. I got him on tape saying he always wanted to be a Meinl artist.
We've got the same picture of him as a kid, but the logo keeps him changing on the t-shirt. Also, he's really good at Photoshop, mate.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so we're gonna hire him to do some of our press packets, but we're not endorsing this.
I love this.
Well, dude, I hope that we can do more how we got, because you and I have a lot of incredible opportunities, but those opportunities, none of them just happened to fall in our lap.
Yeah,
you know, we worked for them, and we also I gotta say, man, I just don't know if Busted, and I know for a fact with Meinl, because I've talked to my A&R about this, neither of those would have happened without a kind, giving personality. Like, if you were a jerk, there's no way Busted would have been like, yeah, he's really good at the drums.
Yeah, exactly. Especially in a touring situation or any performance with other people, because it's all about that, mate. It's all about that. Half the people I know who are touring the world with huge bands and artists, it, regardless if they're playing or they're in the crew, like, they're amazing at what they do, obviously, but like, the most important thing is that they can get along with people and have a laugh. And it's like, it goes.
You think Freddie Sheed's a difficult hang?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the dude just seems like the sweetest human being on the planet.
He is the funniest. Freddie is, for anyone who's listening who knows Freddie Sheed, he is the funniest bloke ever, mate. It's have you met him in person yet?
Not yet. We've just DM'd and sent voice notes.
You're in for a treat, mate.
It's funny because he sees you as our matchmaker. He's like, Eddie thinks that we should hang. And I'm like, yeah, he keeps telling me the same thing. We should totally hang.
You should definitely hang, but not too much. All right. No. Don't go start a podcast. All right.
No.
drum with Mike and Freddie. You know, I don't need that guy. No,
that'd be your thing. So the two guys that I would love to have on this podcast in the future would be Freddie Sheed and Joe Clegg.
Yeah, mate. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, they're wicked, mate. And yet again, it goes back to what I'm saying. Like, they're amazing at what they do, but they're just lovely, lovely blokes. So, yeah, it's
all right.
Yeah, man. But that episode was wicked, mate. I love giving genuine value and being transparent with stories, and instead of just being like, yeah, did it, done it. You know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that's not helping anyone,
mate.
Didn't,
dude. There were 600 steps that led up to every great thing that happens in someone's life. And it's important that we can go back in time, all of us, listeners included, we can go back in time and just think like, okay, instead of always thinking about what's next, which I literally have the words forward momentum tattooed on my arm. Instead of always thinking about that, sometimes you have to be like, okay, what was the journey like? Because if I want to get to this next step, I have to remember, it's not going to be one step. It's going to be a big old journey. And I just have to kind of relive some of that stuff.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and also, like I said, we just have to be appreciative because there is luck and timing in every little bit of this thing that goes with everything. All right, everybody. Well, we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you can, please repost the fact that you listened to it. Give it a 5-star rating. Write a little review. That helps other drummers find it. If you want to be a part of the practice project, the link is in the description below. But for now, episode 162, how we got ... is in the can.
Boom. I'm going to wet myself, mate. Oh,
it was good seeing you, buddy. Later, bro.
All right, mate. I'll see you in a bit.
I'll chat with you in a bit.
All right. Bye.